And now, from beyond our dimension, this is the Jeff Mara Podcast. Here's Jeff.
My guest is Donna D'Angelo, author and founder and executive director of the ICC. She's engaged in several decades of extensive service as a spiritual teacher and faith healer, and she also conducts a regular group meditation for collective planetary healing. Today we'll be talking about her book, The Women Who Loved Jesus, The Untold Story of the Women's Evangelistic Corps. Donna, thank you for joining me and welcome.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I'm very pleased to be here and to share the information about my book and my extended ministry, the Institute of Christ Consciousness.
Well, we're excited to have you. And before we get into your book, the 12 women evangelists that were commissioned by Jesus is a fact that was first revealed in the Urantia book. And since this comes from the Urantia book, many of my people may not even know what the Urantia book is. So can you first kind of give us a quick summary of that?
Absolutely. The Urantia book is what we might call an epical revelation. That is, it is information designed to upstep us in a collective manner all around the globe. This book was not authored by humans. It was compiled by a wide range of celestial personalities in the early part of the 20th century to help us grow spiritually and develop more morally, because this world is overseen by wonderful, loving spiritual personalities who want us to achieve our ultimate destiny of one day living in peace and truth and love with our social institutions reflecting those values. So what they saw was that we had developed our technology and our material way of living, but we were lagging behind in our spiritual and moral development. So this book was designed to kind of like clear the decks and provide us with the higher information we need to learn about who and what is the nature of our Creator, the way in which all life is orchestrated and how it is administered by loving spiritual personalities. It goes into great detail about the existential level of life where the divine patterns replicate out into the very big starry cosmos. Part two of the book is talks about our local universe, our particular place in which we live in the midst of all of this big creative design of life. And part three goes into the history of our world, including how the world was formed, our early genesis. And it also goes into great detail about how we strayed from the divine plan of evolution. And part four, which is the most compelling and beautiful part of the book and so easy to read, because some of the other parts are a little bit philosophically rich and require a lot of study. But part four is the life and teachings of Jesus that comes from the celestial personalities who were overseeing, protecting Jesus and his apostles. And they also go into detail about every year of his life, including a very detailed account of his public ministry right before his crucifixion and his resurrection. And then later on in the book, they talk about the future of Christianity. And in part four, it is revealed that during his public ministry, Jesus actually commissioned 12 women who were following him to be his female apostles on equal standing as the male apostles. And so this book is the presentation of their spiritual experiences with Jesus and how he changed their lives and gave them that sense of divine dignity so that they could come out of their own kind of like socially marginalized shell and reveal who they really were as daughters of God. And it's a beautiful account that is expounded upon in my new book, The Women Who Loved Jesus. But they were first presented in the Urantia book. So the Urantia book is designed to help us come into a greater understanding of our place in the vast creation of life.
Would you say that the information in part four about Jesus's life has been hidden from us?
Yes, I think a lot of information, especially from the Gospels, has been only a small part of the bigger story of Jesus. For example, in the early part of the life and teachings of Jesus, the author goes into a lot of detail about every year of his life, which is not recounted in the gospel interpretation. There were many things that Jesus hid that he did not tell anyone for his own purposes of seeding in the information that he shared with people on his travels throughout the Roman Empire to prepare the higher, to prepare the path, I would say, for the teachers who came after him, who were preaching his gospel message of love and faith and loving service to the family of humanity. So the story of the 12 women were not accounted for in the biblical interpretation, although they do mention in some places that there were women who did follow Jesus. But the story that was presented to me of these 12 women really does flesh out more of who they were and why they decided to follow Jesus and then develop their skills in their healing ministry to help people grow in their own divine dignity as sons and daughters of God.
Were any of these 12 women the wives or sisters of the 12 apostles?
Yes. Yes, there were relations. One was the sister-in-law of Jesus' brother, Jude. Martha was the sister of the apostles Peter and Andrew. I think Ruth was the daughter of Matthew Levi, one of his apostles. And I believe those are the three associations. Yeah. My memory serves me correctly after a few months away from all the information.
Was Jesus ever married?
According to the Urantia book, no, he was not. He did have a romantic interest in a young woman when he was around the age of 19. Her name was Rebecca of Sepphoris, and she wanted to marry him. And I do believe that they were in love, but he knew that he had a higher divine mission. And in the Urantia book, they talk about before he incarnated as Jesus, he is really the creator of our universe. And he's known on high as Christ Michael, not the Archangel Michael, who comes under Michael's jurisdiction, but Christ Michael had to undergo seven bestowals in order to become what the Urantia book terms as a master son. That is a divine being who has complete sovereignty over his domain, his universe domain. And he has a creative consort, the Mother Spirit, who is the Holy Spirit and is the womb of our consciousness in which we live. So before he incarnated, he was given his objectives that he needed to achieve. And one of the objectives was that he was prohibited from marrying, not because of because he could not leave any issue. He could not leave any children because the celestial personalities don't want a cult following of someone who was a progeny of Jesus or any relationship to Jesus. They wanted his teachings to stand on their own without any other kind of human influence. So he did not marry. He did not.
So pre-birth, on the other side, his name was Christ Michael?
Yes. In the Urantia book, they talk about the different orders of personalities. And in there is a subsection of all creation. There's many subsections, and one of them is called a local universe. And there are two divine beings who leave the existential level of reality where all the divine patterns are created and replicate out into time-space reality. And Michael and his creative consort, the Divine Mother, leaves the existential level to stake out their kind of like piece of creation where they'll start to lay down the lines of different kinds of gravity energies like physical gravity or mindal gravity, spiritual gravity. And the Divine Mother is the Holy Spirit. She is the mind. She is the consciousness in which we live. And she resides at the center of their whole universe home. And she sends out her gravity lines that animate all life. And so when Michael, as a creator son, starts to develop and create children with the Divine Mother, one of his mandates in order for him to achieve complete sovereignty over his universe. He's a divine being, but he hasn't achieved the requisite experience in being a divine father to his children until he undergoes seven bestowals of the actual children he creates. So his final bestowal was as a human, and he chose this world to take a part of himself, to incarnate into human nature, to show two things, to show how humans can craft themselves into a divine being, and to also reveal the loving nature of our Creator to humanity. And so in his bestowals, in his last bestowal, his seventh bestowal here, he picked this world because our world was a place of great need. There was a lot of war and poverty and just, you know, tremendous social ills here. And he came here to set the record straight about the nature of deity. Now, this ties into something else that's a very hidden part of our history, and that has to do with the Lucifer Rebellion. And we are now outworking the effects of the Lucifer Rebellion, which took us off the divine plan of evolution. Had our planet developed normally, by now we would have outworked so many of the social problems that plague us, like war, corruption, greed, illness, poverty. This would have all been a thing of the past, but we have been limping along in our evolution because of this event that happened many years ago, 250,000 years ago. And it had implications for our cellular biology, our DNA development. It's a very complex story, and I don't want to get off track too much with talking about the book. But the good news is that we are now in a period of spiritual reclamation and rehabilitation. And this is one of the reasons the women came back to teach us the ways of the Divine Mother, which is this lovely harmonizing, gathering energy. When you think about mother's love, and you think about the love of a mother, how protective it is of the child, how loving and, you know, how fierce a mother can become to protect her children. This is an energy that really needs to be more enveloped in expressive in human nature so that we feel that motherly love within us. Even men can feel that motherly love. But women, by their innate biology, just have a little bit more of a connection to the Divine Mother and are necessarily able to experience her more. So the women who loved Jesus were very much attuned to the Divine Holy Mother Spirit, and he taught them about who she was to help them regain their divine dignity, because women at that time were regarded as second-class citizens. In some religious beliefs, they weren't even regarded as on par with the men as being human. So this was a very important thing that Jesus did. He was the first women's liberator. He really liberated women to be who they are as daughters of God. And it's such a beautiful account that they share about how he liberated each one of them in their own unique way to find their true divine potential.
Was Mary Magdalene one of the 12 women?
Yes, she was. And she was actually the spokesperson for the women's group. So she played a very prominent role in the ministry that the women promulgated, and then later on what she did. But she didn't really concentrate on that part when she was relating her story to me, because she really wanted to emphasize the fact of how Jesus restored and does still restore people to their divine dignity. And, you know, he kind of sees inside a person's soul and sees the energetic emotional blocks that prevents a person from feeling that self-love and self-confidence that everyone needs to develop themselves according to the divine plans that the indwelling spirit holds in sacred trust for each individual. But she was a very important player.
I just need to clear up something for me personally. And so I'm going to kind of backtrack for a second. Two beings from the other side came. One was Jesus, who was known as Christ Michael, and another was a woman that they both came to this planet, right? And
no, this is part of the cosmology. So there's an existential level of reality where everything is perfect. Everything mm-hmm. is operating in perfection. There is no sin or deviation. Okay. This is where all the divine patterns exist that can replicate out into time space. So think of time space as being an unpervaded space. And then there are lines of gravity. And there's a place at the existential level of reality. There's the Isle of Paradise where the three paradise trinity beings exist. God the Father, God the Mother, Son, God the Spirit. Think about somebody staking out a piece of land that has never been owned mm-hmm. and laying down borders. This is what the Divine Mother and Father do. They leave the abode where they're created as offspring of the Paradise Trinity, and their purpose is to go out into unpervaded space, stake down their lines of energy, and the Isle of Paradise is the source of all physical energy and reality. And so they are taking those energies and they are putting out, they're making their home. Our planet is one planet among 10 million in their local universe. And so it is important for the Father, Christ Michael, to gain experience in understanding who his children are, the children that he creates with the Divine Mother. And some children he creates on his own, some children Mother creates on her own. The angels come from her. And so as they stake out this piece of space, then they get all these energies in motion. There's the physical planets that begin to evolve, the suns, the nebula. I mean, it's huge what happens. There's personalities who direct the energies under their divine authority. And so Jesus or Michael had to incarnate as a human in order to gain his full sovereignty so he could do whatever he wanted in his universe. Up until that point, he was limited in his sovereignty because he did not have the experience of his seven bestowals. This is all explained in part two of the Urantia book. It's a fascinating account of how the Divine Father functions in creation. So when he decided to come to this planet, there's a secret of incarnation, which we will never know about. This is a secret that he holds. And he incarnates into a fertilized zygote, okay? This is all explained in part four, when they talk about Jesus' parental inheritance was not only from Mary, it was from Joseph too. So the whole concept of the virgin birth is demystified in the Urantia book in part four, in one of the earliest papers. The secret of incarnation is that there were three couples that were selected to be the parents of the human Jesus. And they were selected, Joseph and Mary were selected because they represented the most ideal, normal family life. And the Jewish religion was selected for the incarnation because of the monotheistic tradition they had of the belief in the one God. But Jesus, as a human, had the biologic inheritance of both Mary and Joseph. And I know this is highly controversial, but to me, it made a lot of sense, because when you listen and or read some of the theologies about the virgin birth, that actually came from one of the existing religions of that time, Mithraism, who was a savior's son born of a virgin whose feast day was December 25th. And so all of these mythologies and traditions, they get jumbled up together. And this is also explained in part four of the Arantia book, of how Christianity evolved. And they go into a little bit of where the Gospels came from, who wrote the Gospels attributed to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It's a really fascinating account. And when I read it for the first time, it really kind of made a lot more sense to me. It gave me a lot more perspective than what I had gleaned in being raised in a pretty traditional Christian church during my early years.
So you're saying that Jesus's birth wasn't a virgin birth?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
That's just taken from another religion, Mithraism.
Yes, and this is one of the concessions that the Apostle Paul made to bring more people into the Christian church. There were traditions that were bled over from some of the existing religions of that time. There was Zoroastrianism, Mithraism, Stoicism, Cynicism. I mean, there was a lot of theology or philosophy that was incorporated into what later became the Christian church. Now, this is not happening all at once. This is going over, you know, later years leading up to the Council of Nicaea, where then the leaders of the church at that time pick and choose, chose what they wanted to put into the New Testament. The purity of Jesus' gospel is so simple. It's two things: faith in our loving Creator, parent of all, and loving service in the family of humanity. That's it. That's his gospel. The apostles, or in their elation with Jesus' resurrection, started slightly turning the message on, have faith, he is risen. And that later developed into a much more codified creed of theologic thought. But Jesus' gospel was very simple. And this is one of the points that the women bring out in their stories of how he just, it was all about relationships, relationship with the Creator and relationship with we have with one another, of love and service to one another.
All right, I need to ask one more thing to help clear up this whole thing for me. And that is Saint Michael or Jesus and the, I don't know what was her name, but the mother that angels were born of, what is their relationship to what people call God?
Excellent question. And here again, I'd like to refer back to how the Urantia describes that we have three major spiritual influences in us, which you might call wires or circuits, that give us direct access to our Father Michael, our Holy Mother Spirit. Some people call her Nebedonia. The name of our local universe in which our planet resides is Nebedon. And so sometimes she's referred to as the Divine Mother, the Holy Spirit, or Mother Nebedonia. But she is the mothering presence that pervades all of our universe. And she's like that evolutionary dynamic that gets the whole life force moving in the right direction. Okay, so we have three major spiritual influences within us. One is called the indwelling spirit. The Arantia book uses the term the mystery monitor or the thought adjuster. The thought adjuster originates in the paradise creator father of all life. He is the first source and center. And because we are so physically separated from him by the vast gulf of energy, he fragments a part of his personhood to indwell our higher consciousness. It's like that still small voice of God within us. And that God, that spirit in us is trying to adjust our thinking so that we think more according to the ways our creator would think. So that's one of the most important spiritual influences. And it is important to go into a meditative state to quiet your mind, to clear the static so that inner spirit's voices can be gleaned, because that spirit is the spirit companion for our eternal life. And one day we will actually fuse and become one with our spirit. That is when we have finally made that decision to always do it the way and follow divine and act in accordance to divine will. That's a long way off for most of us. There are very few humans who achieve that in their human lifetime on this world. The other two influences are the influence of the adjutant mind spirits that come from the Divine Mother. That is a gift of her Holy Spirit that animates all life here. So it's a form of consciousness. And we have seven circuits within us that give us the ability to think, feel, and act. They are wired into the chakra system, and they all have a specific function. And I remember Byron talking about in his interview, he talked about how the animals are different from us because they only have the first five spirits, and we have the additional two, wisdom and worship, that gives us the ability to perceive truth and to have that worshipful impulse. That is an existential evolutionary endowment from our Creator Mother that gives us the ability to recognize deity. Father Michael, after his resurrection and his ascension, he sent his direct spirit into us. It's called the Spirit of Truth, that works through our mind system to give us a better affinity to recognize what is true and real, because we live on a planet that is just full of deception and distortion. So he gave us that spirit of truth so that we would be able to have a direct access to him as Jesus and as to Michael. So those three influences work synergistically in us. And it sometimes is very challenging to know which spirit is really functioning at any particular time. It's not so important that we know that, is that we can feel a connection to our sources who love us and want to feed us with their love and their validation of our right to exist as their children. And that is what gives us our divine dignity. And we can develop those relationships. And this is one of the things that has been so helpful for me in my life, is that I started to meditate and made contact with Father Michael, with our mother spirit, and with my indwelling spirit. And it's been a tremendous aid. I don't know if I would be able to hack living on this planet without those influences and having my relationship develop, because it has kept my sanity and my spiritual motivation to keep going, you know, and to help people overcome the problems that we have faced living here on this planet, you know, that's got so many social problems. So I hope that clarifies a few of the spiritual influences we have in us. They are so beautiful. And when you tap into them and begin to feel that deeper sense of love, all it does within us, it just reinforces our right to be the best person that we can become and to want to help other people achieve that same inner sense of love and peace and stability in who they are.
I first want to mention to people that when Donna mentions Byron, what she's talking about is an interview I had with Byron, I think about 2 years ago, basically on the Urantia book itself. And so I'll put a link in the description below if you want to check out that video. I have interviewed over 500 near-death experiencers, and sometimes people encounter Jesus on the other side. Can you comment on if they really are, and if so, how that would play out?
It's a very good question, and I can understand why people would be curious about that. We are creatures of consciousness, and we are plugged into a very large system of thought. Information, mind information. I don't really have a lot of the words for that, because the spiritual circuitry of our world, our mindful circuitry and our physical circuitry is very, very complex. However, not having a near-death experience myself, I can only venture to guess that it is an experience that people receive when they are at a place of crisis, when they are about to cross over to the other side, and maybe they are not ready to continue on their eternal ascension career. But that information or that connection that they have with Father Michael, they have a connection with Father Michael, whether or not they recognize who he is, it doesn't matter. He is conveying something to them that is familiar to them, that will help them understand the larger context in which we live. We have been living on a planet that has been quarantined from the rest of the universe. And now the circuits are connected and people having these experiences, it is an attempt to help them understand this broader context that we live in a universe of love, of creation, of peace, where people naturally love one another, which is vastly different from the way we live here. So it is an attempt to help people understand who they are and who they are in relationship to this greater cosmos of life and the deity personalities who inhabit it. And when they talk about these feelings of peace and they go through the life review, it is designed to help people choose to live eternally, because the spirit fragment of the creator living within a person wants that person to ascend all the way back to its origin of paradise. We exist within the imagination of God. It's like the creator has projected an image of who we are onto our biology from our mother and father and our ancestors to help us grow in comprehension of the bigger dynamics in which we live and who we are and as created in the mind of our creator. And so because most people don't understand that they are children of our creator at the core essence, when people go through the death experience, which is very scary because we don't know where we're going. Fortunately, this is all explained in the Arantia book about the next levels of life. But it is a guide to help people open up to this vast loving universe we live in, where they can feel safe and feel loved and like they have a purpose for their lives, because people will come back and will report that they are different because of the experience. So whatever way in which they need, their spirit knows and is kind of like contacting that spiritual energy or personality and saying, okay, send that to that person so they can understand that. The mind is so elastic, it's so vast. And when you're out of the body, the density of the body tends to shut down a lot of the spiritual information. But when you're out of the body, then you're more porous. And so shoop, you can have a lot of information just kind of imprinted on you all at once. And you have this expanded, like an epiphany, you know, it's just huge. The information that can be kind of compressed into a human mind that will contain, you know, expansive, wonderful information that people need to have a higher perspective of who they are and the nature of reality.
Can you give us another anecdote of what these 12 women were doing for Jesus?
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. During Jesus' public ministry, many people heard about him. There was like a big buzz about him in the region of Palestine. So many people came out to hear him. This affected men and women, and many women came out to hear him, or they would hear him when he would speak in various synagogues in the region. And what the women report was that his love vibration was so strong, his auric field of love was so strong, that it would send a reverberating signal out to each soul and heart. And it created like an alchemical reaction within a person. And several women reported how they like an arrow pierced, like his words were like an arrow that pierced his heart, or they just, you know, covered over his mind and their minds and just filled them with this sense of wonderment and love. And so as they had experiences being around Jesus, they would sit with this, and eventually 12 of them were so emboldened to come out of the confines of their social structure. One was the daughter of a Roman centurion, and she basically decided she was going to reject her Roman inheritance and, you know, not follow what her father wanted her to do and strike out on a path to follow Jesus. I mean, this was a tremendously courageous act on her part to leave her social conditioning as a Roman daughter and follow this itinerant preacher who was going around Palestine. But that's the frequency he resonated. And the women got him in a way that the male apostles didn't, because the women have a stronger affinity for the mother spirit, that mother love that Jesus personalized. He was a living embodiment of that motherly, fatherly love. And the women picked up on that, you know, and he loved children. He loved life. He loved animals. And whether or not people can understand that, you know, there's a resonance about a field around people. And when you're around a person who is so spiritually magnetic by Jesus, like Jesus, you can't help but have some kind of alchemical reaction within your heart and your soul. And these 12 women had a very strong affinity for Jesus that made them actually step out of their social structure and follow him into an encampment where he then commissioned them as his 12 female apostles. And they basically became the healers. And they created a social setting of love that actually eventually created the Christian church. This is something that they were not credited with doing because it's not really mentioned in the Bible, but their social glue of love was so compelling that it brought other people into the fold. The male apostles were the preachers and the teachers, so they could take those concepts and they could share them with people, but it was the women who were holding that love space for people to come into the encampment and receive the healing. Jesus taught them how to minister through the Holy Spirit, the Divine Mother. And when they did that, in conjunction with using the healing properties that they had access to, herbs, ointments, unguents, essential oils, when you impart the energy of the Divine Mother, there's a life spark in her. She is the life force, and no life can ever occur without her. And that's why our scientists will never create life out of their own, because she is the activating spark. And her spark goes into these medicines. And Jesus taught them how to heal. And he also taught them how to communicate at a soul level, because that's what Jesus was so adept at doing. He could read the needs of a person's soul. He could get beyond all of the pain and suffering that a person experienced and get down to the core essence of who a person is and gently bring that person back to life. There are many stories in part four of the Arantxa book of his ministering to people in that way. And it is a fascinating story, and how the women in the book talked about how he taught them to minister to the soul. And that's why they were so effective in developing the evolving Christian church, because he activated that divine dignity spark of the soul in each person, and it gave them meaning and purpose for their lives.
Do you think Jesus knew pre-birth that if he incarnated here, that he would ultimately end up being sacrificed and resurrected?
I would not ever be in a position to venture that, but as a divine being, he probably did have foreknowledge. And at first, when he incarnated as a human, in his human consciousness, it took him many years to understand that he was the actual creator of the universe. That happened around in his later 20s, around the time of his baptism, when he became aware of who he really was. So at that point, I'm sure he probably had, you know, a great access to foreknowledge. He's a divine being after all. But he always deferred to his human mind, especially in his early developmental years before he was aware of who he was. So I cannot really speak to that, but my guess is probably yes. And even when he became consciously aware as a human of what was going to befall him, he chose to end his life that way, to demonstrate to us that God is always with us, even the most dire circumstances of our lives. His faith and his love, I'm getting emotional, were so strong that he could endure that horrible torture and ignominious death with patience and peace and composure. And just to share a little experience with you that I had with him many years ago, this was around 2004 when Mel Gibson did that movie, The Passion of Christ, which was very, very graphic. And I don't like violence. I abhor violence. I can't stand being around it or see it. And so I asked him, do you want me to see this movie? And he said, well, you can, but I will show you what I experienced. So all of a sudden, I'm on the cross with him. And I can feel the pain. It didn't last long because he gave me something else, but I could feel the pressure on the lungs. And then all of a sudden, he opened his emotional body to me. And I felt his love and his forgiveness. And it was like there was not one whit of judgment or wrath or anger against the people who did this to him. It was all pure love and understanding and compassion. And then when I had that experience with him, he says, now you can decide if you want to see the movie. And I never saw the movie. I didn't have to. I have never forgotten that experience. It's one of the most profound experiences of my life, because he showed me the nature of divine forgiveness that just obliterates any sin. It was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. And that has always stayed with me and given me great perspective about what's happening here on the planet right now. So he was so developed as a human. And one of the most important factors of his human life is to show us that we can build our lives like that too. We can become aware of who we are in our higher divine persona if we have the faith and the perseverance and the courage to embark upon that path of developing our God nature. And he did that so perfectly.
Now, you use the name Christ Michael, and people commonly use the name Jesus Christ. Where does the name Christ come from?
I think it refers to, and I may be wrong, a Greek word, Christos, or it's like the anointed one, or someone who has fulfilled a prophecy. I have to be honest with you. I don't know. I really don't know that.
Do they use the word Christ in Urantia?
He is referred as Christ Michael, as the Christed, meaning like the sovereign of our universe. And he's known as Christ Michael, but I don't get too hung up on the word denomination, you know, the word meaning there, because it's really more important about, to me, following his example rather than, you know, knowing some of the more factual the facts about what that really means. People will refer to Jesus Christ just because they don't know who Jesus is at that higher universe level. I mean, I think that was something that was relatively revolutionary and revelationary from the Urantia book. I always referred to him as Jesus until I found him as Christ Michael. But now I refer to him very easily as Christ Michael, but I also refer to him as Jesus sometimes when I'm doing some healing work with people.
Can you share with us some of the other hidden information about Jesus? Like, for example, Jesus's birthday is in September.
It's actually August 21st. Oh, August.
Okay.
At noon. Yeah, that is revealed. I think one of the most beautiful expressions of who he was the simplicity of his gospel, which is faith in the overarching parenthood of our Creator and loving service to humanity. which again, I think got garbled because of the apostles' interpretation of his resurrection. And they were so overjoyed that he was still alive. And he was, he was again with them. Because they were crushed. I mean, they were absolutely crushed during his crucifixion and those few days before his resurrection. They were just bereft and hopeless. The women, however, were the first ones to see him in his resurrected form. He chose to reveal himself to the women. I think that's pretty interesting. And when the women went back to the male apostles to tell them that they'd seen Jesus, the men said, "Oh, no, you did not. That's a figment of your imagination." But there's a couple of stories in the Urantia book where they talk about clarifying some of his miracles. For example, the dream or Peter's story about how Jesus walked on water and rose him to his level when Peter began to sink. That was Peter's dream. That did not really happen. Okay. When the story in the Bible about Jesus casting out these demons that were went into a herd of swine and then they fell over a precipice, that was a coincidence, and that's explained in the Urantia book. There's one beautiful story when they talk about his travels through the Roman Empire, and there was this touching account. He was at a port in Italy, I think it was Tarentum, and he saw a man beating his wife. Now, can you imagine in our time interfering in a situation like that of domestic violence? He goes over to the man, taps him on his shoulder, and says something to the effect, "My friend, can I help you?" And the man was so befuddled because Jesus had approached him in such a loving, non-judgmental manner. And he started to give the man instruction about how women are partners with men in the creation of children and the sanctity of life, and they need to be given protection and love. And it changed the man entirely. Oh, that's one of the most beautiful stories. And even the people, the traveling companions he had, one of the men was a wealthy Indian merchant that he contracted Jesus to be a tutor for his son. He was so moved by what Jesus did that he went home and he reorganized his household and, you know, got rid of the abuse that was there. So Jesus, the stories in part four are so beautiful. And the way he touched the women in particular in their stories about how he just gave them their sense of it was okay to be a woman and it was okay to have your gifts and to use them in sacred service. One of the women, he was Mary Magdalene, coming out of the brothel in Magdala. And when she came before Jesus, she just fell apart completely. But he picked her up. And even though he didn't know all of her background, he saw who she was at the core, and he restored her divine dignity. He gave her back her life, and he does this to everyone who comes to him. There's an energy of such magnanimity of divine love that cuts through all the pain and the unworthiness of feeling human. Now, there are reasons for that, but I'm not going to go into that right now because it's a much bigger story about what happened here on this planet and how we've been sequestered from really developing our spiritual potential. But this is all being reestablished now, and the stories of these women are here to help other women find their divine dignity and actually to become more of the spiritual leaders and healers, because women tend, and they say this in the Urantia book in the marriage papers in part three, that men tend to be more logical, but women tend to be more spiritual and more moral. The hand that rocks the cradle fraternizes with civilization. So it's the mother's touch, the mother's love that provides that safe environment for the child to grow. And it's the father's love that establishes the divine dignity of each person. There's another account in part four. This is one of his last days on earth as a human, where he was with his apostles, and there was a lad who was very devoted to him. His name was John Mark, and that's the mark of the Christian gospel. Followed Jesus up into the hills to be alone with Jesus on one of Jesus' last days as a human. And he related to John Mark many things about the nature of the loving mother and the loving father. His consort, the mother spirit, actually our divine parents. And we can imprint upon their qualities. The divine mother is the home. She's the womb of life. She's the protector. She's the nurturer. She's the upholder. The father gives a person their dignity, instills a person with confidence and courage to be who they are. And so he was explaining that to this young man. And it was a beautiful recitation of the divine patterns that exist in our universe that are for us to replicate in developing families and homes of our own. So that's another little gem that's in there too. Lots of gems. Lots of treasures to excavate.
How do you personally connect with and communicate with Jesus?
I just call on him. I refer to him more as Michael or Daddy. I just call on him, Dad, I need your help. I'm struggling here. What do I need? And I've learned over many years of meditation how to quiet my mind and just wait and listen and to be in a place of not trying to figure out with my logic mind what is being said, but with my heart mind of what he wants to show me. And he's given me many lessons and has shown me a lot of my problems, my foibles, my insecurities, my bad habits. And the beautiful thing about it, it's all understanding. He understands me completely. So I have no fear or compunction about going to him and showing him my warts, because he helps me see this in a bigger perspective and helps me see beyond the fear or the pain of what I'm experiencing into a bigger part of myself, because he knows me better than I know myself, because he's my dad. He created me, you know, not from a biological perspective, but from a spiritual perspective. So he knows everything about me. He knows all my biology, all my history. And so I have no fear in going to him because I know he loves me. And I get that same way from the divine mother. Now I will go to them for different things. Like, for example, when I go to mother, that's when she wants her to teach me about how our consciousness works. And she's given me many, many lessons about how her presence pervades our human nature and how she envelops us. And then there are times when I need to go to my indwelling spirit and ask for guidance from the higher creator of all. So it's just something that I've developed over time as I've opened myself up in meditation and said, hey, I need help. What am I doing? You know, show me some, you know, that kind of thing. And every time I've had a problem, a situation with a person that I'm not happy with, I immediately go to spirit and I ask, what am I doing wrong? Show me the bigger perspective here. And because we're such creatures of ego, it is hard to ask for help and be humble ourselves before our creator and say, okay, show me your perspective. And when a person begins to see the broader perspective of other people's perspectives and the higher perspective, it changes you. It changes how you think. It changes how you relate to life. And that's what happened to me. And that's what really kind of triggered my interest in becoming a faith healer, to help people open up their relationship to our divine mother and father and the spirit, so they could benefit and receive the spiritual support system within their human consciousness system that lights over all of the bad habits, all over the bad patterns that we've developed, and can help a person really open up to their true soul purpose for why they're here in human form at this particular time. And many are here now to be way showers of the truth, to lead us out of this morass that we've been living in for thousands and thousands of years. So it's been a boon in my life. And I'm so grateful to them for what they've given me. And I'm just so motivated to keep continuing to develop on this path and to help more people regain their rightful sense of divine dignity and their divine inheritance from our parents.
Is there anything else that you're doing with your healing work?
Well, right now, after I received the messages from the 12 women and they formed a book, and the women mostly related about their spiritual experiences with Jesus. It was less about their material lives. But after the book was assembled and published, they came back to me and said that they wanted me to start a modern day women's core, that they want to now replicate what they did in their ancient time here and now and empower more, mostly women, but all people into their true soul potential. So I have a following. And I have invited about 10 people, women, to join me. And we have a women's core now that there were the very early stages of developing how we're going to go out and replicate their model. Now, their model was based on being in physical proximity to people because they worked in an encampment. And after the resurrection and Pentecost, they went their separate ways. But now with all of the technology that we have available to us, they want us to develop another core that's bringing more people into the fold to develop spiritual leadership qualities, to take out and to replicate this, the Jesus model of the gospel into not only into our hearts, but to be a driving value system within the social institutions of our culture. So this is a very big objective that they are giving us now. And it's been just a wonderful experience to come to know these ladies intimately. Excuse me. Because when I was receiving their stories, I could also feel who they were and the love they had for Jesus and Jesus' love for them. And it just kind of added to my soul base or component, you know, to engage more with that soul energy out into the world. So this is the next iteration of their continued ministry because they know the problems of this world. They experience them firsthand. And they, like Jesus, want all of the people of this world to be healed and in their rightful mind, in their rightful heart, their rightful soul. So this is the next step. And we're just getting started. I don't know where it's going to lead. We are in the process of developing some training for women who want to be spiritual healers and leaders and to learn how to replicate that model of the soul-to-soul communication that Jesus taught the women. And he was so masterful at bringing out that soul energy in people.
After watching this video, people may want to reach out to you and ask you questions. Are you open to that? And if so, how can they find you?
Well, I'm very open to meeting new people who are interested and have questions. And I am reachable through my Institute of ChristConsciousness.org website. The URL is just InstituteChristConsciousness.org. And my email is Donna@InstituteChristConsciousness.org. I have a page up on the website about the women who love Jesus, and they can purchase the book on Amazon. And there's also a page about our newly formed women's core, and there's a little profile of each woman up there. So we always are open to welcoming more women to join us. And in time, I'm hopeful that more men will also want to form Jesus-centered groups of the soul-to-soul communication. But men are wired differently than women, and their ministry will be a little bit different. But right now, I feel it's time for women to come into more of the spiritual leadership that has been denied them through many years of patriarchal overcontrol, especially in the institution of religion, and bring women and men back to a more harmonized balance. So both genders are fully represented in the social institutions, and we are benefiting from both the beautiful patterns of our Divine Mother and our Divine Father. And that is what begins to happen when a person, when we do this healing work, they open up to our Divine Parents in their own spirit, and they develop their hidden potential that is living within their higher system of consciousness.
Donna, after Jesus was resurrected, did he continue on as a mortal for a while? Because some people have accounts that he went to India and even as far as Japan.
When he was resurrected, he was not in a physical body. He was in what they call a Marantia form, which is a midway place between human corporeal body and spirit substance. So there's this intermediary form called the Marantia body, which undergoes many, many transmutations. So like you're evolving towards pure spiritual substance, which I don't even know what that looks like. You know, I can feel it, but I don't know what it looks like. It's beyond the realm of the vision. But he may have gone to various places in his Marantia form to reveal himself to certain populations. Now, his apostles, one of his apostles did go to India, and that was the apostle Nathaniel. He traveled to India. And so I don't know if that was because, you know, he was his apostle. So, you know, he was teaching the gospel messages. He understood it to the Indian population. So I don't know if that's some of the mythology that has gotten kind of blended together over time. But there is speculation among Urantia book readers that when he was in his Marantia form, that he could have visited other places and revealed himself to other populations. That is indeed a possibility, but I don't know for sure.
All right. Well, before we finish up, can you give us one last positive message?
Be hopeful during this time. What we're seeing is the expression of the evil and the despairing nature of the human heart. But the good news is you don't have to suffer. There's divine help within you. It's like excavating for buried treasure. You have to go down into the dirt and find the good stuff. And that's one of the things we do at the Institute of Christ Consciousness. We lead you past the feelings of unworthiness and fear and trauma and find that beautiful kernel of who you are as a son and daughter of a loving creator. And this time is meant for us to open and awaken to who we are. And so all of what we're seeing right now happen is not happening by us. Our divine parents have a plan of correction for this world, and they're implementing it through us. We are the healers of our planet. We are the second coming of Jesus. We are the ones who are showing the way to other brothers and sisters to help them open and awaken to their divine dignity and spiritual potential. So when you see the news, take it with a grain of salt and recognize there's a bigger picture here. And one day this planet will be a true reflection of goodness, truth, and beauty. And it will be by we humans who have made that faith step to bring this about for our beautiful world.
Donna, thank you for your message. And thank you for being my guest.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I'm so appreciative. Thank you. God bless you.
God bless you. Thanks for watching the Jeff Mara podcast. I really appreciate you. Another way to show support is through YouTube memberships. And if you do, there are loyalty badges and other perks depending on your level of membership. All you need to do is click the join button underneath the video to find out more. Thank you for your support.